Like, ride with me if you ride with me, you can slide with me if you feel like 550 on the fast sticky.
Welcome to Metamore Chats, the live pleasure podcast where me and my boyfriend's other girlfriend help you to deepen your intimacy and better understand alternative relationship structures. I'm Fifi, she, they, bisexual, polyamorous, and apparently greedy.
And I'm Gabby. I am also bisexual and polyamorous, so obviously I just love cheating.
No. We're just two femmes who have the same boyfriend. His name is Bear, and Gabby and I are not dating.
No, we are just really good friends, and you are watching the fifth episode of Metamore Chats, and yesterday was Metamore Day, so today we have two extra Metamores, two extra special guests.
This is so cute. Oh my gosh. Happy Metamore Day, Jess and Ash from Remodeled Love. These two are, hi. This is so exciting. Metamores, creatives, whose platform helps me and tens of thousands of others to reimagine family wherever they drop content. So hi, y'all. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves? Tell us a little about yourselves.
So I'm Ash. Day lover, they, she pronouns. I am, I don't have anything cute like y'all. Perpetually have laryngitis.
We love the sexy raspy though.
You know, doing this for the people. Doing this for the people. I sound like I'm about to cry though. Y'all, it's just laryngitis. you make me emotional. All these metas, all these beautiful metas on one screen.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Obviously, I've been familiar with your content for a while, and you guys share a lot of your family life, and that's really impressive and hard. So, like, what's a day in the life as neurodivergent, non-monogamous metamores who happen to live together, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow, just this morning was extra special because we're texting each other from our separate rooms trying to figure out how to get out of the house before 8 without our children waking up, but they were each co-sleeping with one of us. So we're like texting them, sending the shh emoji, like and we failed epically. It was a fail. Both of our kids woke up. Yeah,
they both woke up pretty soon after we left the bed, and they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so cute.
Yeah. Wow, the coordination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was chaotic. Yeah, we're never up or moving around this early, and our kids were not having it. They were not having it. Yeah, it's really fun. It's really silly. I feel like, I don't know if you guys are fans of like Christopher Guest like mockumentaries, but that style of like movie, like Best in Show or anything like that. But we feel like our life is just a literal Christopher Guest movie where we're, you know, like panning to the camera all the time to make fun of our mm-hmm. shared partner. Or, yeah, there's just like a lot of femme bonding and neurodivergent. Like, we can say so much with just a glance, you know? There's a lot of like unspoken communication and bond between us as weirdos. We also have a very similar shadow to each mm-hmm. other. So our dark sides are very similar. And so we're very glad we didn't meet like 10 years ago. That would have been a problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we would have taken over the world, but yeah, might have been a dark, dark world.
That's fucking teamwork.
That's OD, right? I'm like, oh my gosh.
Teamwork makes the dream work. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. incredible. Thank you so much for sharing about that. I'm just getting a vision now. Like, how do you have the spoon sort of, so like that element of day-to-day life is so, how do you gather yourselves together? Do you have rituals or routines? Do you have like meals, consistent meals?
Well, our kids are 3 and 6 and they're both neurodivergent, so our day is just chaos, to be honest. It's a lot of we try to practice gentle parenting, which Ash is better at and more of an expert in. So it's a lot of Ash holding big space for us and our kids. And Ash is a much better mom than I am, is kind of my thing. But so it's true. It's cute. Aww. You are. But I mean that in like the least self-deprecating way. It's like really, really nice. It's such a relief to, like the other day our kid was just going back and forth between us. Like he was just upset and like cuddling on me and then wanted sis. Like both of our kids call Ash sis because that's what we call each other. He was 4 at the time. Our 4-year-old was like, hey, like, I want you to call me sis and I want to call you sis just like mommy does. And so so Ash and my 6-year-old call each other sis and she they call each other sis and it's really cute. And our 3-year-old calls Ash sis as well. So yeah, he was just going back and forth. I want mommy, I want sis. And I was just thinking in that moment, like, I really don't know how single or nuclear families do it, because absolutely not.
Not in this economy.
No. Not, I mean, the amount of tasks that is required for like a single day has exceeded a lot of people's capacity just because of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And then the way that childcare is now is like mirrors that. Everything is like commodified and impossible. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, it's no surprise to me that non-traditional families are on the rise, because how else are we gonna survive these trying times?
And it's so wild that they're called non-traditional, right?
Like, I know, because it's really actually traditional.
Yeah, right. You're exactly. Right. You're all right.
I know.
Your family.
You're right.
You know, I always have to push back against Jess whenever she goes on about the better mother. If I had pushed a bebe out of my womb and then had a chronically ill, moderately to severely ill bebe for 2 whole years in which I did not sleep with said bebe, then I probably would have like negative spoons. So
I saw the Metamore correction coming out.
I was like, no,
I love it. You're right.
So you're in right. recovery, you're in remission from the dark years, you know. So yeah, and you're an awesome mom time. So I don't even know what you're talking about. But
well, I didn't say I wasn't a good mom. I just said you were a better mom, which also can translate to a less burnt out, has more resources mom.
I like that.
I honor. Yeah, no, totally. It's just a cute line because I think it blows people's like because they're not expecting it. So I like to say it just because it's it offers an invitation to break your like cultural script of what you imagine living with your husband's other wife is like, you know. You know, and so I'm like, people are like, is it hard to hear your kids, like, see your kids love another mom? I'm like, no, no, I love it so much. It's pure compersion. I, like, struggle with jealousy with partners sometimes, but I never struggle with it with my kids, though I know that a lot of parents with blended families or, like, exes who now have step whatevers, that it's struggle, and I honor that. For me, I am just fucking grateful, because you're like flying this plane that's basically crashing for 18 years, and suddenly someone else comes in and is like, yo, I'm gonna help you fly this in a way that only another femme can. And we have really good men. We, you know, the bar is low, but we have 2 of the good ones, right? But because like I talk about how amazing it is to have another mom, and then people think that we're implying that our shared partner is one of those like do nothing dads, and he's not. He's one of the good ones.
He's one of the do everything dads.
He's one of
do everything.
And still, there is something about having another femme, another mom, that just does not compare. And of course, lesbian moms know what I'm talking about. Most of them. I, obviously, these are not universal statements, but yeah, it's so interesting. So we won't say who, but for like 3 weeks, we've been in interviews with a formerly primetime talk show host who wanted to have us on because, of course, the concept of our family blew their mind. And I was just like listening to the senior producer interview Ash, like I was like, put it on speakerphone. The questions that people were asking,
they're like, do you need help?
I was just like, oh my god,
what kind of questions?
So it started with, okay, so you know our shared partner, my baby daddy and husband of 14 years, is Joe. and they're like, okay, so you and Joe, to Ash, like, you and Joe have sex, and Jess's boyfriend, Dr. M, is your metamor. You don't have sex. But what would happen if you and Dr. M wanted to have sex? What would happen?
Dun, dun, dun!
Sex, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know, that sounds like a better answer.
Oh, my goodness. What?
Like, yeah, we would have sex. Next question. You know?
People are the same way, though. They're like, what would happen if, like, your girlfriend wanted to sleep with your boyfriend? And I was like, I wanted that to happen. So I don't know what answer you're looking for here. I was like, I literally set it up just to get it out of the way really quick.
Stuff like, can I record it for the OnlyFans? Like, I don't know.
Exactly. Like,
that shit would probably sell. That shit would sell so well.
It would. Okay, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, so what was it like at first? How did you guys meet, and what were the initial moments of your metamor relationship like?
Mm-hmm. Okay, somebody had commented on one of my TikToks saying, well, aren't you afraid that your husband, like, is going to love someone more than you? Like, what if you bring another, like, mom into the mix and he, like, loves her more than you? And at this time, right, I am, like, I haven't slept in 2 years. My health has tanked. I give no fucks about life anymore. And I just, like, replied to the comment and I was like, I mean, question, does she know how to change a diaper? Will she remember that every other Wednesday is early pickup? Does she want to pop the pimples that my husband refuses to pop on my back? Like, and I just, like, go into this list. And, of course, people were like, your metamor is more than what they can do for you. And I'm like, obviously.
There's no winning on the internet. You can qualify everything and they will still dig and find something to be enraged about. Don't worry.
Totally. And it's like, of course, my broader point that I am always making through satire as a professional jester is, you know, like, I don't care. Why are you asking me what if he loves someone else more than me when I am literally dying? I am dying. Get me out of this nuclear family. And because I knew that Joe was dating someone long distance, and I knew their name was Ash, but I didn't know anything else. And all of a sudden I get this very autistic, very long email, like DM, that was like, I've been wanting to write you this for a while. And then, like, what did it say? It laid out every point in my TikTok in order.
Yeah, because you made this TikTok where it was, like, an application for my husband's next wife or something. I don't know. It was, like, funny. And so I took notes. I, like, had a little notebook, and I would, you know, like, pause every, like, 10 seconds and write down what the question was or what the, like, I don't know, application thing was. Mm-hmm. And then I would write my answer, you know, a la autistic, you know, human that I am. So yeah, I sent it. I was so excited because, you know, one of the questions that this TV show producer asked was like, what was it like when you met Jess? Like, you must have been so nervous. Were you scared, you know, to meet your your boyfriend's wife? And what? And I'm like, yeah, I was like, I was nervous in the sense of like that really cool girl that you want to be like besties with, like that first meeting. You know,
I don't know how common that is, but
oh, really?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. That's how I felt. That's how I felt. I was nervous because I had come out of,
I felt
like,
that way about
a
you
series
for sure.
Of awful metamors, right? It was like primarily because I was dating like men who looked at polyamory like they were becoming cult leaders. So I was vetting like men with such, I was like Kabir swam into my DMs and I was like, who the fuck is this? and he had a couples page. So I was just nervous. I was like, I don't want to meet a metamor until I know for a fact, like, who this person is and who the metamor is. And I do think now in retrospect, that was overkill. And now I think I get more excited because I've seen the beauty of having really amazing metamors. But I do feel like it's a core experience of, like, brand new to polyamory in your 20s. You just, like, have to go through terrible relationships for a bit before you find metamors that are like, hey, what's up?
Well, and fuck you all for, I'm 38, so congratulations on figuring it out early. I love that for you.
As a New Yorker, I think we've been learning a lot about other forms of non-monogamy that are less common in New York. Like, for example, I don't think there's a lot of swingers here. Like, I'm sure, like, they're doing swinging, but they're call it swinging here as commonly as they call it swinging in other places. And the norms of, like, the two cultures are so different. The way the, like, play parties and consent conversations go is so different. So I think a lot of my work has been, like, figuring out what the bridge between those groups is so we can all get on the same page. And that makes me think of your birthday orgy.
Nice segue. Love that.
And I learned from the best. And it was, I mean, it was an awesome experience. You were posting about it. You had great content. My job even sponsored some content. What goes into the planning of something like that? Like, how did you get that started? Much less getting sponsors, please.
Well, and actually, fun fact, that's the first time Ash and I ever met. And it was the first time, well, the day before Joe and Ash met in person. And so then they got a little Airbnb because they did not want the first time they fucked to be at the orgy. So that was fun. Yeah, they had 24 hours to get it in before the birthday orgy.
That's so funny. That's why me and Kabir fucked. Like, it was the same thing. Like, it was the day before a party. And I was like, is the first time I see you naked going to be you fucking Fifi? That's crazy.
So we better listen. He was probably like, I'm on my way. Yeah, so I'm so used to, like, talking with people who are just going to be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense that you would hold down the fort so your husband could fuck his new partner before the birthday orgy. Of course. And you're like, yeah, duh. Right? You know? And everyone else is like, like, oh, right, that's weird. Is it, though?
Yeah.
Is it?
It doesn't feel weird to me. I am also in the same bubble. My friends were just like, did you just get used to this? Because you weren't like this a few years ago. And I was like, oh, I guess. I didn't even see the progression. But yes, tell us about the birthday orgy. How did you get to that place? You going to meet for the first time in an intimate environment. How did that feel?
Well, it was... So do you want to know more about the back end of the birthday orgy or specifically about, like, meeting each other and our connection in that space?
So I want all of it, but okay. We might not have enough time, but please go ahead. I'm fascinated by all of it.
Okay. Yeah. So it's just, like, a really long time fantasy of mine that I had really come to through watching Korn. I'm trying to make this a good soundbite for you. It had become one of those things where I was like, oh, that's a fantasy that I'll never fulfill. And then it was like, I kind of want to fulfill it, but it will probably never happen. And then, like, I think I could make that happen. And this is over the course of, like, 10 years and influenced by, you know, Polyphilia blog and Polyamorous While Asian, Michelle and Leanne. And a couple years ago, they did an Asians Talk About Orgies Instagram Live, I think. And I listened to that shit and I was so inspired. And they were both like, oh, yeah, we do it for our birthday every year. And I was like, that's it. I have to do that 1 year. So I took.
I don't even have the spoons to plan a regular birthday every year, and people are planning sex birthdays. I'm jealous.
I've never done it for myself. Never done it, but I've had it done for me. Very nice. Highly recommend.
Yes. It's a very Sagittarius thing for me to just be like, I'm going to plan my own birthday orgy, and basically, all you have to do is show up, and I will have everything planned. So yeah, of course. Plug for my class, How to Throw an Orgy Even a Demisexual, Neurodivergent, or First Timer Will Love, available from remodeledlove.com, because that tells you how I planned this orgy. Because I knew that the parties that I had been to before were very uncomfortable for me as a demisexual, neurodivergent, first timer. So I knew I had to create something that catered to those aspects of my personality, and it was my birthday orgy, so I felt like I could do whatever I wanted, and that was the ultimate, everyone had to go along with it, because it's my fucking birthday. And yeah, I wanted more people, and Joe mentioned Ash coming out, and I said, do you think they would? And Joe was like, yes, absolutely. And then the next thing I know, this bitch bought a plane ticket. I was like,
Wow. No, you were standing on business. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was definitely in my orgy sex party era. I still am. I'm just tired and working all the time. But, yeah.
Same.
And a mom.
Yeah. Same. Although this year, I said I'm dedicating to pleasure because we work too hard as a people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And so there's a lot of intricate container making. I'm all about containers autistically, and so there were a lot of containers to the party that were all explained to everyone, and is also explained in the course of how you can make these containers. And I think the most exciting part, so people always ask, do you and Ash have sex, blah blah blah? No, but she did eat my pussy once for a contest at my birthday orgy. Okay, so it was called Whose Mouth Is It Anyway? And I was blindfolded.
My girlfriend has been talking about this ever since you posted about it, because she's like, I just don't get it. I feel like I would know everyone's mouth just out the gate. Like, now I think it's like she has to actualize it. Just
put your money where your mouth is, ho. Let's see if you really do. Because, and also we filmed it, and it is available to watch on our OnlyFans.
Important.
The link is available at Remodeled Lovers. It's not on my main Instagram. It's on Remodeled Lovers, not Remodeled Love. So if you want to go watch that footage. So yeah, I'm blindfolded and everyone had 30 seconds to eat me out. And I was not as good at it as I thought I would.
Wait a second. Well, I'm getting turned on.
That's a challenge. No, that's a challenge. We have to make it happen here in New York. We're gonna do it. Like,
wait, woo! So,
yeah, I've seen this.
Mm-hmm. Everyone
not yours,
was
but
eating you out. Did you know? Like, had everyone who ate you out ate you out before?
No. Nope.
Okay. Well, that makes it hard.
I had an ex-boyfriend there, and I had a current boyfriend there. And so
hard
and a current meta
yep. And so yes,
could you tell like the complete strangers the mouths that had never been on you, at least those?
No, I was really like, once you get into your head about like, wait a minute, I really thought that I would be able to figure this out, but this just feels like a fucking mouth. And then you're trying to judge who would have that technique. What I could tell was male versus femme.
Yeah. Well, because they got the, yeah, like facial hair sometimes.
Oh,
like,
no, I'm talking technique. I'm talking technique.
Oh. This is truly some insight. Wow. Someone needs to study this, I swear to God.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm definitely getting that guide for sure.
I appreciate that you had structures built in.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, we're all about containers as well. All our clients, anyone who does anything with us in real life, like over time, that's what we keep reminding them about. We're like, did you create a container? Maybe that's why things kind of got out of hand, or, you know, there wasn't a sense of closure because there wasn't a closing to it. So the containers, I love them. We love them. And we also have an autistic house here. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's so obvious to us autistics, to the point where we're like, you guys are paying us to tell you this. It's so obvious. But then I realize it's not, and it goes against the culture and the boundary creation and the boundary honoring and the communication it takes to build these containers is so uncomfortable for the masses that we really are doing the Lord's work, you know?
I agree.
Truly.
I agree. Mm-hmm. We were doing that yesterday, Gabby and I.
We went to a dating event. I met one of Fifi's other partners for the first time. Ooh. And ooh, it was like a mindful dating event. And there was a lot of breathing and a lot of eye contact. And I was like, oh, my God. They were like, we know everyone's neurodivergent, but like 3 minutes of eye contact. Oof.
I'm going to puke. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Oh, my God.
We make people do that, too. And it is. But I think the most uncomfortable part about it was that you got randomly assigned people.
Yeah.
So that definitely pushed the – I know. People were there.
I was making 3 minutes of eye contact with Fifi's partner, and I was just like, this is the most bizarre way to meet him for the first time.
Bear thought that was hilarious, by the way. This, what are the chances? Bear, this partner and Bear have a parallel relationship. So it's very funny that Gabby and him intersected in such an intimate, weird way.
Yeah. We, Ash and I went to an all-femme play party 6 weeks ago-ish. God, I don't even, what is time? And it was in December. And it started with 2 hours of these types of things. And I completely honor, like, what that did to the space and how necessary and beautiful and what a difference the container made for then the 4 hours of open play after that. But y'all, no, I just wanted to be like, please, can I watch? I don't like this.
My favorite part is when, like, so it's these, like, two, like, an inner circle and an outer circle, and you keep getting matched up with different people. It keeps moving.
Yeah, it's, like,
my favorite part is when I got Jess, because my goal was just to make her crack up as much as possible.
Because we're supposed to be having serious moments where you're, like, making eye contact, and Ash is, like...
And you're, like, making requests.
I'm, like, you're supposed to be like, my partner's making me laugh. And everyone's, like, staring at a...
Making requests for what you want that other person to do, like, with you or, like, to you. So I'm like...
I mean, I do love that game. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, the eye contact was a lot. I liked the spirit of the event, for sure. But I would have just, you know, I would have made edits. But I liked the idea of, like, a mindful, non-monog space. I think we're all kind of craving that with the, like, as new people... try non-monogamy, we're like, where are people getting the tools to co-regulate within this new relationship style?
Mm-hmm. I feel like I am, you know, I'm a deeply, deeply spiritual person, but I also can't take it seriously. So,
period.
So, it's when not. People are being very serious, when they're like, and breathe together and hold the eye contact, I'm like, please. Can we please get a silly facilitator?
Yeah, no, this
That's
is like...
That's what I need! Yeah. No, I really need that. That's how I felt. I was like, wow, I love this, but I don't know why this does not feel not like hidden. Me.
Yeah,
like, and I want it to, and I'm showing up, I'm like trying to show up.
I'm trying.
I think it's all honestly I'm doing just not very accessible. Masking. Hold on.
Yeah,
that approach doesn't really include everybody, and it forces everyone to, I think, humor, hilarity, and making things voluntary are absolutely necessary. Like,
and that's the edit I would make, because it was like, and then as the neurodivergent person, and I understand some neurodivergent people can be okay in those spaces, but then I'm the one who can't. And then I am accused of, not in that space, but in general, in my past, I've been accused of, oh, you have vulnerability issues. You don't really want to be here. I'm also learning, thank you to my children, that I am formerly pathological demand avoidant, now persistent drive for autonomy, PDA, autistic. So those types of demands of me in a space trigger my nervous system to want to fight. Or at least say no to the instructions that were given to me. So then I'm told I'm like not being compliant. I'm not being submissive. And I am open to those things all being true. Like I can see that. I can see that I can't make eye contact because I have vulnerability issues. And also that doesn't change the fact that my nervous system is now wanting to leave this party instead of be in this party, where I would actually get a lot out of watching everyone else do it. I might miss connection with people, but that's a choice I'm willing to make, but I'm still voyeuring, which is a very valid position to be in, the vulnerability exercise.
You're still occupying space in the space. Like, you're still a member of the space. Yeah, there's just, we can be a little more playful about it, I think.
Mm-hmm. But I was also like, I just met this white person. I got to make eye contact. I need to ask some political questions
first. Yes. Please make deep eye contact with your oppressor. What the fuck?
Yo, I just went somewhere else. I was just like, zing, like, I'm going to transfer into, I just astral projected somewhere. Yeah.
Which the irony of that is that it's the point of that exercise is actually the opposite. And there's no question of, hey, is there any way that some people might not opt into this if we were to ask? Like, why are we just assuming that everybody wants to be in this deep breath in and shake out the energy? I was so relieved when I got paired with Ash because it was one person I didn't have to mask with, because I was masking through every single pairing. I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, because my 3-minute stare is not cute. My, like, autistic, I think I'm flirting. It's like.
I don't know what stare I was even giving. For, like, 2 minutes, I was like, damn, if I knew someone was going to be, like, this close to my face, I would have glued my baby hairs down better. Like, now he's, like, this close, and there's, like, one hair just sticking up. No, I didn't know that.
I did a condition. I got dandruff flaking off. Like, this is not the move.
Right.
No. Imagine me just punking everyone in the space, like, staring across at your partner. Take a deep breath in and just bitch slap them across the mouth.
Yes.
That's the kink version I want. Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And people always accuse me of using humor to, like, get out of vulnerable, soft moments. And I'm like, listen, is it trauma? We'll never know.
I'm so curious about, like, who this is for, because it's clearly a mix and mingle thing. Like, this is for people looking for partners. This is not a get closer to your already intimate partner thing. And that, I think, wasn't very clear in the beginning. I really did think we would have the ability to choose who we did exercises with. So by the end, it was very clear. I'm like, oh, I stepped into a space where people are trying to make that really intense connection. People are trying to fuck. Okay, like, that's what I was getting. That's the smell that was coming towards me. I was getting picked. Like, I didn't really have I was like, okay, I see what's happening here. And then, like, with that level of, I don't know, is that the kind of dating that people, that's their whole kind of shtick. They're like, this is better than dating apps. This is how you should be connecting, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I mean, that's definitely an alternative for some people, but it's almost like a different extreme.
No, that's such a good point. And I want to I want to say, like, in case the facilitators, like, watch this, I am in awe of what they made. What they did was magic. Yes. And what happened after, I was like, wow, that was magic. Like, oh wow, the container that they made was so palpable and powerful and safe. It was safe. I have never been to a party like that, and it was 100% the container that they made. However, I felt that I did not fit in, and the way that it was structured did not take me into account, and that's fine. I slept on the couch for most of the party. That's the only thing. So I'm not hating on what they did. I'm just asking the question, what do we do with the people who are like, I don't like this? It's actually because there's, like, in some ways we want to push ourselves out of our comfort zone. But in other ways, that's going to shut my nervous system down and now I can't participate. So
for me, like, it's not even about comfortable and not comfortable, because I feel like, as an autistic person, I feel neutral about all of that. Like, I told Jess before, I don't really feel nervous going into play parties or doing those things, but it just feels like a weird checking the box activity. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting deep connection. Like, I'm just like, okay, cool. I'll ask you to touch my arm. You ask me to touch your boob. Sure. Sounds nice. You know, but I'm not like, I'm not turned on and I'm not nervous. I'm just kind of like, eh. I guess this works for somebody to feel like, ooh, I don't know, intimate.
I think that activity, the first time I ever did it, was super powerful. But then after that, I was like, well, I already got from it what I, like, it was that, like, embodying your no, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, once that you one. Do that once or twice, like, how much are you really getting from that activity? At least for Ooh. Me. And, you know, maybe people need yeah. that intentional dropping back in and embodying their no before a play party every time. But now I know I just turned my brain off.
Yeah, I think early on, ex-evangelical me would have went like, oh my God, what is this? You know, like coming from my past. But I think now I'm just like, okay. I said right. no on yeah. the yeah. now.
No. I agree. No. My purity culture really created a reaction to the word no, where I was like, I want to do anything but say the word no, but I don't want to do this.
Yes. I also want to affirm the creators of what we went to yesterday, that is needed, and that space is really serving a population that wants to connect. And yeah. I see spaces like that, yeah, as stepping stones for people. I think people who don't have any reference to getting out of their comfort zones need that space. So I was grateful that it existed, and it seems to be really working for some folks, and they're building community and connection. So I am celebrating the creation of all of it, but I'm definitely holler at the orgy at Justice Orgy God, because I'm going to those containers. It's about creating them yourself. You have to get creative. I think, like, when you consider all the people that are going to be there, the bigger the space, the less you can consider all the people there. And to your point, just what you're saying about, like, it doesn't include me, and that's okay. So that's just something that people who are creating spaces need to consider as well. Like, as they're listening to us, give feedback.
Yeah, and I think for me, there's people who learn through lecture and people who learn through experience. And so I think maybe something I would change is offer this lesson as a lecture, and then say, would anyone like to try it in an exercise? And then I'm gonna maybe do one round of the exercise, and then I'm good. And then the people who want to take the exercise deeper can do it, because at that point, yeah, it's just forcing everyone into one box, which is like the opposite of what we should be trying to do.
But, yeah. This is such a real convo about, like, neurodivergence and sex positive spaces and how to make it as accessible as possible. And so,
you know, what's interesting is Jess was like, oh, I don't think I can speak to kink and neurodivergence, but I think in many ways, like, we are, but on a, you know, lower level, because we're focusing on the consent piece.
Oh, was
but
that, like, supposed to be the topic today?
No, we've been talking about neurodivergence. We've just been talking about it organically. We wanted to talk about it, yeah. I think this episode more is about family and reconstructing a life and, like, rebelling against the status quo, because we're doing that in every arena.
Amen. Yeah, I think if you take my workshop, How to Throw a Sex Party, A Neurodivergent Would Love, there you see so many of the elements coming from a place of me being like, I've been in these spaces, here's what didn't work, so I'm going to design something that would work for me and work from a bunch of different angles. And so there's a lot of ways. I'm talking about sensory things, I'm talking like how to control the sensations and sensory elements. So you know, for me, one of the elements that gets hard for me in an orgy space is non-moving air and smell. So, like, I've been to an orgy that took place in a hotel where you cannot open windows and you can't even open the door. And I was suffocating. I was, get me out of here. And, you know, at my birthday orgy, we were in a house. It was winter. We were able to open the sliding door. It was snowing. And I was like, oh, man. So it was like orgy heat over here and crisp winter flowing air over here. And that allowed me to regulate my nervous system. These are things that other people are not thinking about, where that heat and that unmoving air would absolutely send me into overstimulation. Another thing was like giving people information ahead of time. And so because I was trying to meet the demisexual need and the neurodivergent need and the first timer need with the course, you know, I started a group chat with all the invitees 6 or 7 weeks beforehand. So, and then I created containers within the chat of like, today, introduce yourself. Today, say what you're most excited about to experience at the party. So people, the flirting was already happening between people who had never even met. So by the time we all arrived, people are like, oh, you're who I've been like, you know, bantering with back and forth. And like, people flirting in a group chat that you've cast, like, I have such a casting kink, like when I'm directing a show, I'm like, I know exactly who I want. I am very good at casting. So I'm like watching the magic weave together and then telling people this is the layout of the evening 6 weeks in advance. So the neurodivergents are like, okay, when I get there, I just have to play Bananagrams, you know? So they're not like walking in and being like, what do I do? Do I take my shoes off? Do I say hi? Do I go start making out with someone? What's happening? You know, they know the exact flow of the evening. They know that the first hour we are playing Bananagrams. And then you don't have to worry as an autistic person trying to fit in. What's the script in this room? What's the script? I just was like, hey, everyone, here's the script for this hour. And here's the script for this hour. And, you know, trying to, if you don't want to play, you can watch, like, these types of things. And so I'm trying to, like, hit it from all angles, which is for sure a trauma response. But in this case, it's like channeled into something. I think giving access to the group sex space for people who normally would not do well.
Yeah. So I mean, helpful. And for sure, what I liked about the event last night was she was like, right now you're walking into X amount of time of unstructured space, and then for the remainder of the evening, it'll kind of flow like this. Like, but I really loved that container, like understanding, oh, I have this much unstructured time, and then I will be stepping into structured things that involve eye contact and handholding.
Yeah.
And breathing.
I was listening to a book, I forget, about event planning, and it's the anticipation that really prepares and makes a guest, an attendee, feel cared for and aware of how to be present once they're there. It's that anticipation that really builds the excitement for it. It is an element to bringing people together, to gathering folks, that is often overlooked. And I mean, it's overlooked because if you're not creating an intentional space where you're thinking ahead of time of really embodying what you want your guests to feel when they're there, then you might just be concerned about the number of people that are there once they arrive and not necessarily on really curating or crafting. And is that trauma control? Who knows? Or is it just trying to bring vision to something that you want to happen in real life? I think it can be all those things at the same time. And whatever kind of gathering you want to be a part of, celebration to you as well. I think, you know, on the spectrum of sex positive accessible spaces, there are some queer spaces that are at your own risk, very much, and that'll serve a certain kind of person. And so it just depends. I think getting to know your hosts is a really good way to know what kind of space you're getting into. That's my number one recommendation to anyone who's dabbling or trying to figure out what kind of party is best for them. Get to know the person who's throwing it, because they're the one who's creating the vision for you. Think all that.
Yeah, no, because it's basically a director, and like, you like all of that director's work and history of work, and they have a style that you like and an execution that you like, and that's really what it is. And so nothing is bad or worse than anything else, although some of them, I will agree, are at your own risk. But it's more just like, do you like the way this person puts on events and the type of people they draw to them? And I know you host public parties, which I have so many questions about. We can talk about later, but
no, I love them.
I love their parties. They're so gay. Everyone's so nice. I think the New York atmosphere wants it to be a rager. And they want it to be more accessible. And I know that that's a tension that is always happening. And I love what trying to create.
Yeah.
But I also love
a variety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the variety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the people want it. It's shocking how many different desires there are. Really, there are too many to fill. But I'll try to do as much as I can.
I was at the one rager, the one that like grew big enough to be considered like a rager play party.
200
And I
people.
Was like, this is great. And her and Kabir are like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to us. We want a small group of intentional people. We are never doing that again. I was like, okay, yeah, yes. I know I see it. Oops.
Same, same, same. Yeah, the pressure of the producer at the big parties, I could never do it. Shout out to everyone who does it. Okay, question for you guys. I know we're heading into the end of our time. When mm-hmm. Ash and I were at this public party together, people were really shocked that we were metamors. Do you ever get that?
No.
Not
Must
here.
Must be a New York thing.
Yeah.
Not here as much. No. Yeah. People actually expect metamors to look weirder than us, I would say. They're, like, shocked that they're like, oh, wow, neither of you currently has, like, a jagged haircut or, like, right now. Or, like, pink hair right now. That's weird. That's more what's surprising in New York.
That we're not, like, more outward.
Like, eclectic looking.
Out there. Eclectic looking, yeah. I don't, it's, even though it feels like the dating in New York is already very non-monogamous and people still don't know very well the word metamor. I feel like I'm still defining metamor so often in even sex positive spaces sometimes. So I think depending on the person's exposure, it may be like, oh, that's so cool. And they'll have lots of questions or they'll just bat an eye and keep it moving. Yeah.
Yeah. One girl was like, oh, you guys are metamors. Do you fuck? And I was like, oh.
That's probably the most common question.
Whoa, I thought we just met, babes, but sure, I could conjure an answer.
No. Is that your experience?
Oh, yeah. People get so intrigued, curious, disturbed, all the above.
Yeah, just very, I think they're projecting, because it's a non-monogamous space for the most part. So I think people are just projecting that they have never and could never and would never go to a play party with their metamor. So it was very like we were strange creatures.
I mean, I feel like every part of the non-monogamous experience, I was like, I could never until I did. So like, you know, that's how things work until you try them very often. I can't believe that's still the feedback people
graced give. Those people. With your relationship. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was like, I actually wouldn't have come if my meta had not come with me because I needed an emotional
relatable
support slut. You
That's
know?
The only reason I was there last night. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. You were my emotional support slut.
Mm-hmm. Well, how shall we wrap this up? Is there a final question, Gabby, that you want to ask?
Well, I wanted to ask their advice on being a good metamor, because it's metamor chats. And yesterday was metamor day, and we need to give the people the advice that they need. They're always asking us, okay, but how do you be a good metamor? How? And we've said before, like, it's going to be different for each person. So, but what is your vision of being a good metamor to each other?
So, I mean, you brought up parallel. And so I think it's my first answer to that is it's important to remember that parallel polyamory is a valid metamor relationship. It's not worse or better than any other kind. And so sometimes being a good metamor means seeing in yourself that parallel is what will make you the best metamor. And then I think beyond that, it's not to be cheesy, but it's like a sisterhood for me. Like, that's my sis. And so what makes someone family, what makes someone sister? You want the best for them, you support them, you will also call them out on their bullshit, and they will call you out on your bullshit, and you wouldn't have it any other way, because there's no better person in this world that could give me the death glare from across the room to say, like, you're on some bullshit right now with our hinge, and I'm gonna stop you right there. You know, like, and so just like the best version of myself I want to be and trying to be that for each other.
Totally agree. Yeah, with the first piece being first and foremost, figure out and respect whatever that metamors, whatever that human's preferences are for connecting or not connecting. That's how you're you knock it out the park. And then secondly, if you do have like a setup like what Jess and I have, like, then you're just asking yourself the question, what makes a good friend? Mm. Like, or, you know, like, it's, so it's like a simpler question at that point.
I agree. It is, it's like people who are like, I have no idea how to be a good metamor. I'm like, are you a good friend? Cause a lot of overlap there for sure.
Yeah. And I even
you gotta
like
have when, a lot of love.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a lot of love, a lot of understanding, a lot of compassion, a lot of curiosity. And then for us, we're big in our house on Nonviolent Communication by Marshall B. Rosenberg. So even when we're calling each other out, we like to practice doing so nonviolently, which is like, it's a whole language and philosophy.
Yeah, I love nonviolent communication.
Applying it.
Well,
practice that. It's a lot harder. I mean, I mess up all the time, and like I have a template ingrained in my mind. I'm like, affirm first. Don't just do the thing and go for the hurt. And I'm like, oh God, but it hurts. Okay, don't remember to affirm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Power to you. Thank you so much. This was so enlightening.
Is there anything that you want to plug other than what you have already plugged, of course?
yeah, you can find everything we do, all our social media links, all of the workshops, classes, our book, Polyamory and Parenthood, How to Navigate Non-Monogamy as Parents of Young Children. All of that's at remodeledlove.com. And I think most importantly, the biggest future for us lies in the app that we are creating that has nothing to do with polyamory. It's called Nuclear Fusion, and it's helping people find, build, and sustain their village. And so you can learn more about that at nuclearfusionapp.com. And we are currently, we raised over $17,000 on our Kickstarter last year for phase two of our build, which is getting us through the wireframing process. And now we are starting to fundraise for phase three, which is the coding phase, which is like 10 times more expensive than phase two. And so if you want to be a part of history and want to help reunite the village, which the irony that we even have to do this is some fuckery, but here we are, and we're going to use the master's tools to dismantle the master's house. So we just donate nuclearfusionapp.com and yeah, follow our progress.
Like, ride with me if you ride with me, you can slide with me if you feel like 550 on the fast sticky.